Dopamine Isn't Your Problem by Dharmalab, Richie Davidson, Cortland Dahl. Dharmalab episode, Dopamine Isn't Your Problem. A conversation between Dr. Cortland Dahl and Dr. Richard Davidson on what dopamine actually is, why detox is the wrong idea, and what science and practice both point toward instead. Watch the conversation, 48 minutes. Read the summary, 48 minutes. Dharmalab, Dr. Cortland Dahl, and Dr. Richard Davidson, 48 minutes. Prefer to read? Access the full transcript here, right-pointing arrow. Edited summary. Contents. The brain first. Wanting and liking. The loop. Savoring. Reorientation, not renunciation. The phrase, dopamine detox, has swept through wellness culture with remarkable confidence. The idea is intuitive enough. Dopamine is the chemical responsible for our worst habits, our doom-scrolling, our compulsive checking, our insatiable wanting. Cut it off, reset the system, reclaim your attention. Simple. Except, a genuine dopamine detox would not reset your system, it would end your life. Dopamine is essential for human life. There is no turning it off, not in any meaningful sense. And anyone who thinks otherwise misunderstands what dopamine actually is, which, to be fair, is almost everyone's. The brain first. Before we can say anything useful about dopamine, we have to sit with the brain it inhabits. The human brain contains approximately 85 to 88 billion neurons. The connections between them number in the trillions. Right now, as you're reading this, an incomprehensible number of signals are firing, molecules are binding to receptors, thresholds are shifting. We understand almost none of it. Approximately 88 billion neurons, trillions of connections, and we understand almost none of it. Leading neuroscientists describe this not as a gap in knowledge, but as a humility induction. The methods we use to study the brain from the outside, EEG, for instance, which places electrodes on the scalp to read electrical activity, have been compared to putting a stethoscope on the hood of a car and trying to understand how the engine works from the sounds you can hear through the metal. It is that removed from the actual phenomenon. And here is a stranger fact still. The brain has no receptors for feeling itself. If you opened the skull and placed a vibrator directly on brain tissue, you would feel nothing. There is probably an evolutionary reason for this. If we felt the constant electrical activity of 88 billion neurons firing and forming new synapses, we would never sleep, never focus, never navigate ordinary life. But it means that all this extraordinary complexity is happening entirely beyond our awareness. We have no introspective access to any of it. The reason to start here is this. Any claim that pins a mental state to a single molecule is almost certainly wrong. Not wrong in the way oversimplifications are wrong, but wrong in a more fundamental sense. There is no well-defined psychological state that can be traced to one specific molecule. The molecules involved are numerous. Their interactions are dynamic and context-dependent. And our methods for studying them in living humans are, in meaningful ways, still primitive. With that established, here is what we do know about dopamine and why it matters. Wanting and liking. Dopamine can function as both a neurotransmitter, a molecule that carries signals directly between two neurons, and as a neuromodulator, which works more like an environmental condition, altering the threshold at which neurons fire across a whole region. It is found in several distinct parts of the brain, and its function differs depending on where it is. Its most significant known role, the one that touches our actual lives, was characterized by neuroscientist Kent Berridge at the University of Michigan, who spent years distinguishing between two things we constantly conflate, wanting and liking. Wanting is the drive towards something, the seeking, the reaching, the goal-directed pull. Liking is the pleasure of having it, the actual felt experience of the reward. These feel like the same thing, and often they are, but not always. Many times, we like the things we want, but not all the time. Sometimes we get caught up in a wanting cycle that is not necessarily leading to liking. Dopamine is centrally involved in wanting, not liking. The molecules more closely associated with pleasure, with actual enjoyment, belong to a different class entirely. Endogenous opiates and endocannabinoids, the brain's own versions of the chemicals in morphine and marijuana, those are the molecules of liking. Dopamine is the motor of the search. Berkridge demonstrated this in a striking way. Animals with damage to the dopamine-rich area of the brain called the ventral striatum will stop seeking. If a banana, their favorite food, is placed 6 feet away, they can smell it, they know it's there, but they won't cross the room to get it. The wanting is gone. But if you place the banana directly in their mouths, they eat it with every sign of enjoyment. The liking is intact. The two systems are genuinely separate, even if they usually run together. None of this makes dopamine the villain. It is also what gets you out of bed to meditate in the morning. What animates the aspiration to do something meaningful with your day. What drives any goal-directed endeavor you actually care about. When I spring out of bed in the morning, go down to have my cup of tea, and have the strong aspiration to meditate, that is inevitably relying on the dopamine system too. A fully blunted dopamine system would leave a person unable to initiate almost anything. The system is not the problem. The problem is the decoupling, the loop of wanting that has drifted free from any genuine liking. The loop. Consider what happens during an hour of mindless scrolling. It begins with something real. A video that is genuinely funny. A moment of actual laughter. The thing you wanted and found. That is the system working normally. But then, the algorithm shows you the next thing, and the next, each one calibrated to be slightly different from the last. Novelty matters here, not just quality. When something exceeds what you expected, dopamine spikes. When it matches expectation, the signal is flat. When it falls short, there is a measurable drop. This is called a reward prediction error. The brain constantly updates its model of what it's likely to find next. And the dopamine signal reflects the gap between expectation and reality. The algorithm is, in effect, engineered to keep producing just enough novelty to keep that signal alive. What sustains the scroll isn't pleasure. It's the structure of the search itself. At a certain point, the laughter stops, the genuine enjoyment fades, and what remains is hollow seeking. You aren't really enjoying yourself anymore. You are just looking for the next thing that might make you enjoy yourself. Wanting has decoupled from liking, but wanting rolls on. It's almost like there's no conscious doom scrolling, because if you were fully aware and conscious, you would just stop doing it. The behavior is sustained by what might be called experiential fusion, complete absorption in an activity with no space for reflection. You aren't watching the scrolling happen, you are the scrolling. And when you finally put the phone down, there is frequently a specific quality to that feeling, not just boredom or tiredness, but a faint sense of depletion, as if something was consumed without anything being received. It is worth saying clearly, this is not primarily a dopamine story. When asked which molecule is behind all of this, the answer is essentially, likely 500 molecules. Don't even try to think about it that way. It's not the right level of analysis. But the wanting slash liking distinction is still the most useful lens for understanding what is happening, and more importantly, what might actually help. Savoring. Dopamine detox is an abstinence approach. Remove the stimulus, reset the baseline, restore some factory default of attention. But even if it worked mechanically, it would not address the underlying dynamic. You can take away the phone. The wanting doesn't disappear. It just finds another object. What actually helps is not reducing wanting, but cultivating liking, deliberately, skillfully, as a practice. Some psychologists call this savoring. The idea is to linger in positive experience rather than moving through it. To resist the momentum of the wanting cycle long enough to actually receive what is already there. In meditation traditions, this is not a peripheral technique but a central one. There are contemplative practices built entirely around the quality of savoring. Breathing not as a neutral anchor for awareness but as something to inhabit, to feel as nourishing. One way is where awareness is the main point and the breath is just a support. But another way is to breathe as a process of savoring. You really tune into the felt sense of the nourishing, even healing quality of the breath. The difference in felt experience between these two orientations is significant. One is observational, the other is immersive. You don't need to seek it because it's right there. You can let go of seeking completely and tune right into the delicious nectar that is always there. This quality of savoring is a skill, one that can be learned and deployed across different kinds of experience. It could be eating an orange, connecting with somebody else, or how you relate to your own breath. The key is that there is no chasing in it. It is just tuning in to something that is already there. When you're around certain teachers who have spent decades in this practice, you can feel it. A steadiness, a warmth, a sense that they are never not in contact with that frequency. Reorientation, not renunciation. There is a Tibetan word, ngeyung, usually translated as renunciation. The word carries a flavor of withdrawal. Stepping back from the things that cause harm, a kind of principled abstinence. It is, in a way, the contemplative version of dopamine detox. But a more accurate translation might be reorientation, not what you are turning away from, but what you are turning toward. If you forget that, it is not sustainable. It is depleting. You have nothing bringing you joy or motivating you. You have taken something away, but there is nothing there to sustain you. The distinction is practical, not just philosophical. Renunciation is depleting if there is nothing on the other side of it. You subtract something without adding anything, and the wanting simply finds a new object. But reorientation offers an alternative that is actually superior to what you left behind. When you have genuinely tasted something more nourishing, a real conversation, a deep breath, the quiet satisfaction of doing something that actually matters to you, the comparison becomes obvious. The endless scroll doesn't disappear because you suppressed it. It recedes because something else became more real. Gratitude works this way. Reflecting on how one's actions might benefit others works this way. These aren't techniques for pushing wanting down. They are practices that allow wanting to naturally subside on its own because something with more genuine pull has come into focus. And if wanting does rear its head, the instruction is simple. Become aware of it. If you stay aware of it and do not get totally sucked into it, it will subside on its own. The brain we are working with is staggeringly complex, far beyond what our current science can map. But at the level where we actually live, the level of experience, attention, and what we reach for and why, the insight is almost simple. You aren't trying to want less, you are learning to like more.